beginning of time. No point of reference, you spoke to the dark and fleshed out the wonder of light. And as you speak, born in the vapor of your breath, the planets form. If the stars were made to ashes, so would I. I can see your heart in everything you've made, every burning star, a no fire of grace. If creation sings your praises, so will I. God of your promise, you don't speak in vain, no syllable empty or void. You have spoken, all nature and science follow the sound of your voice. And as you speak, 100 billion creatures catch your breath. You said, if it all reveals your nature, so will I. I can see your heart in everything you say. Every painted sky, a canvas of your grace. If creation still obeys you, so will I. If the stars are made to worship, so will I. If the mountains bow in reverence, so will I. If the oceans roar your greatness, so will I. Salvation chased down my heart through all of my failure and pride. On a hill you created the light of the world, abandoned in darkness to die. As you speak, 100 billion failures disappear. Where you lost your life so I could find it here. If you let the grave behind you, so will I. And I can see you
Because it's like, thanks to just what God has been doing lately, like, I just, for a living, I travel and speak and go across the country, and so last weekend, I'm in Jacksonville, Florida, it's 84 degrees, like, I'm sitting by the pool, like, man, I was like, all right, Lord, I can deal with this, and then I'm packing my suitcase yesterday morning, and I was like, all right, Google, what weather we got going on, and I looked, and I was like, 10 degrees, like, what in the world, like, how do we shave off 70 degrees in, like, 4 days, so a little bit of my heart died yesterday morning when I went to weather.com, but hey, man, bring on the snow, like, it'll make me tougher or give me the flu, like, one of the two, we'll see, but man, so thankful y'all are here, and so this morning what I do want to do is just take time and share a little bit of my story, because I have found that, like, if I don't get the harmless elephant out the middle of the room, like, everybody just kind of sits there and they're like, wait, what happened to this boy? Like, was it a shark attack, or, like, did a bear get him? And then came back and got him again. Like, how's this work out? And so I've figured really quickly, if I don't get this story out of the way and just dive straight into preaching, like, the whole time people are going, how's he drive? Like, how's he shave? Which I haven't shaved in a really long time. So don't worry about that question, but. So to answer the armless question, I mean, this is the way God made me. There's no sort of There's no Hallmark Hall of Fame, like, movie storyline, you know, like, buried in how I lost my arms. Man, this is just how God formed me and shaped me. But I think the interesting thing in there is that nobody knew. Like, nobody had a single clue that anything was wrong. Because it was like, mom had a healthy pregnancy, mom had two ultrasounds, and so I think it's like a lot of us in here who are parents. You know, I have two kids, a six-year-old and a three-year-old, and man, there's just that, man, there's that anticipation, there's that build-up, there's that, I mean, just straight-up joy the moment your kid comes into the world. And I think that was the build-up that my parents had. There was this excitement, there was this anticipation, and then the moment I'm born, this hush falls over the delivery room. And that was the moment that everybody knew that something was wrong. And the doctor sitting there holding me, staring at this little armless baby boy, and he's in shock, and then everybody starts to realize there's not a baby crying. And I'm not breathing. I'm not moving. And the doctor turns to my dad, and he shows my armless body to my dad, and then he asks, do you want us to let him go? This man, to step into a sort of secular American dream sort of worldview, to look at this little armless baby boy and to think, there's no way he gets to quote unquote the American dream. You know, we live in a culture completely built on like comfort and ease, and there ain't nothing easy about eating with your toes, you know, or driving a car with your feet. Like there's nothing at ease about that. And in that moment for that doctor, I mean, in his mind, this kid is never going to, like, function independently. This kid's never going to get the job and the wife and the 2.3 kids and the house with the white picket fence. Like, the American dream is not remotely in his grasp. So why not just let it go? Why bother? But I'm so thankful that in that moment, I think even with all the fear and all of just the unknown, my dad said, you do whatever it takes. You do whatever it takes to revive my son. And they rushed me out. And like in this whole process, mom doesn't get to see me, touch me, hold me, nothing. And so my dad has to go over there and tell her what just happened. And that our little boy doesn't have arms. Our little boy might not live. And I think a lot of us as men, we always try to think we're bigger and badder than what we are. And my dad, like, he talks about that, man, in my heart of hearts, like, I wanted to pray this big, wordy, faithful, remarkable prayer. I was just scared. I don't know what to do. I didn't know what to say. And his prayer was just, God, if you let our little boy live, we'll give him to you. Whatever that means, God, whatever that looks like, just save our little boy. And a couple minutes later, doctors walk in, kicking, screaming, grumpy little armless boy, you know, that God had brought back to life. And man, it was a moment of relief for my parents. And they finally got to hold their little boy, touch me, talk to me. But then what started to happen was we're in a teaching hospital there in North Carolina. And so in a teaching hospital, man, you always got to capitalize on those learning opportunities. And so word starts to spread. Hey, there's a little armless boy on the third floor. Like, so people are coming into our room. Like, it's like pediatricians that are not my pediatrician. All sorts of doctors, orthopedic specialists, surgeons. A hand specialist comes into our room and my dad's like, he doesn't have any of those. And he's like, good point. And so all of these doctors, they would come in, they would check me out, they would look me over, and all but one only gave just these horrific prognoses. It was, your boy's never going to write, never going to feed himself, he's not going to go to normal school. graduate. He's not going to get a job. He's not going to move out of the house. So here it goes again, those waves of frustration, discouragement, hurt, straight fear of the unknown, fear of what's next. And I think for my parents, like as they tried to battle back against that fear, like the thing that they kept reminding themselves was that prayer my dad had prayed. It's those few minutes, few hours before that, you know what, God let our boy live. So God's got this, obviously, because we don't. I think in that moment, that was sort of that galvanizing moment where it was like, okay, we don't know what we're doing, but we're going to try our best. And that's what they did. You know, they only knew one way how to raise boys, because I have an older brother. He's 13 years older than me, and he works, he's in the Army. He's in Special Forces, and he does like bomb disposal within like Special Forces units. So he's 6'5", 225 pounds, just rocked up, scary human being. And so my parents only know how to raise 6'5", bomb disposing, Special Forces, like guys that are in movies. And so that's how they raised me. You know, it was this sort of tough love. I mean, it's kind of like some of you northern, like upper Midwest folks, like, My dad was born and raised in northern Maine, and so all of his stupid stories started with walking uphill both ways in like 9 feet of snow. You know, he'd always talk about the day he went to like cut down the Christmas tree and brought it back to the house, and then the spring thaw came and he realized he cut off like half of like a 30-foot evergreen or something like that. I'm like, Dad, shut up. That did not happen. And so that's my dad, and my mom is just like a Southern belle, sweet as molasses. Just, you know, she knows that food makes everything better. And so this dynamic duo of like tough as nails and sweet as syrup, that was the perfect duo to raise me, shepherd me. Because for them, they realized really quick that it's like if they just did everything for me, that would become my expectation. And that I would never learn, I'd never do things for myself, and so they made me learn how to do everything with my feet. And it became a cuss word in our house if I said the word I can't growing up. If I would get frustrated trying to learn how to like put a crayon in between my toes and I go, Mom, I can't. Oh boy, I tense up. Because I knew it was coming, like it was whooping time. And I get my whooping, get set right back out there, and start, all right, figure this out. And it sounds so brutal. Like, it sounds like, oh, man, your parents were heartless. Maybe they were. But that sort of tough love is really what got me to where I am today. Because it's like, I look back over 34 years of my life, and I can honestly say that my physical body has never been. Like, all of those things that I was never supposed to do, God said, hey, watch this. And I learned how to eat with my feet. I learned how to write. I went to a normal school, normal classes, you know, got my license at 16, just like all of my other buddies did. You know, one driving with one foot on the steering wheel, the other foot for the pedals. Graduated high school with honors, graduated college with honors, met the girl of my dreams, got married. We had the two kids. We haven't figured out the .3 thing yet, but we got our two kids, and man, I get to do what I love. I get to go and travel the country and share the gospel of God's grace. Not bad for a kid that was supposed to amount to nothing. Not bad for a kid that wasn't even supposed to live. And that's the beauty of how God works, is he takes the weak things of the world, the weak people, the broken people like you and like me, and he uses them for his glory and his purposes. And so, like, y'all, my physical body was never my struggle, but what my struggle always was just this perception of who I was, and that was very obviously different than everybody else. Like, I was the only kid that had to figure out how to write his ABCs with his toes when I was in school. I'm the only person that sits in McDonald's and eats a Big Mac with my food. Like, I started to realize really quick, hold up, like, this is the Sesame Street, like, one of these things are not like the other, and I was not the other every single place I went. And so it started to become just this weight. It started to become, like, I would look around and I would compare, and I would feel less than. I would feel not good enough. And then from time to time, people would let me know I wasn't good enough. And people would stop and stare. People would say really jerky things. You know, and I mean, shoot, in this day and age, man, more often than not, I'll be in Walmart and I'll get my little jar of Ragu off the shelf and put it in my cart. And you'll hear that very distinct, like, iPhone camera click, you know, the little I'll turn around, some soccer mom's, like, putting me on her Instagram stories, and I'm like, come on now, like, and if I'm, like, really chippy that day, I'll turn around and go, do you want me to smile in this one? And so, depends on how you catch me, but that sort of weight growing up, that sort of comparison, that sort of just feeling of inadequacy, that was something that wrecked me. And it started to become, in my eyes, I started to define God's love by, God, if you loved me, you would have made me like everybody else. God, if you loved me, I wouldn't have to go through this mess. And what I started to see as a 15-year-old boy, that God loved me so much that he gave me the best gift. Gave me his son to live the perfect life I could never live. To die on the cross in my place. To absorb the wrath due to my sin. So that I could have purpose in this life. Salvation. Hope. Security. And eternity. That's how much God loves. And to trust in and rest in that sacrifice, to trust in and rest in, like, that identity-shaping portion of the gospel changed everything about my life. And I wasn't, like, defined now by how people saw me or by how people, or how I saw myself, but I was defined by what God said about me. That I see fearfully and wonderfully made. That he adopted me as a son. He's sending me out with purpose and with care. And the same is true for you. There's a lot of us in here this morning that we feel like damaged goods, either because of what we've been through, the mistakes we've made, the sins that have been committed against us. We feel like we're not good enough because of the jobs we have or because of the zeros that we have in our bank account. We don't feel like we carry enough weight in the community. We feel like we don't have any sort of relational leverage or importance. We look at our lives and we think, man, somewhere along the way, God screwed up. And this morning, what I want us to see is God doesn't care in how he makes us. You and I in this room were fashioned with purpose to display God in all the world. You see that in John chapter 9. So if you have your Bibles, if you've got a Bible app, Judgment Free Zone, John 9, we're going to read the first seven verses real quickly this morning. And what you see here is just, this is a beautiful picture. Like, the story here in John 9 is Jesus and the disciples, they encounter a blind man. And there's no more in-depth picture of one single person in the Gospels than this blind man. There's 50-something verses just dedicated to Jesus interacting with this man, and then what happens in the wake of Jesus's encounter with this blind man. And one of the things that we see here in John, like John chapter 20, verse 31, it's like John lays out his whole purpose statement for this gospel, and he says that everything in this gospel is laid out so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ and that you may have life in his name. And if you're to jump back all the way to John chapter 1, that we see that in the beginning was the Word was with God, the Word was God, and that in him is life, and he is the light of the world. And so you see, bookending this whole gospel is everything in here is pinned so that ultimately our life can be staked on the person and work of Jesus Christ. So even as we read and as we look here in John chapter 9, and you might feel like, well, you know what? I'm not blind. Like, I'm not, I have both of my arms. Like, what does this morning have to do with anything about me? And what we see even in the next chapter, in John chapter 10, that we see that Christ has come to give us life and life more abundant. But it is the distinct reminder that the enemy also comes to steal and to kill and to destroy. And the two lies, more often than not, that he's going to tell to steal and to kill and destroy you is that God doesn't love you. God has no use for you. Those are the two things here in John 9 I think we see in clear view. So read with me here in John 9, verse 1. As Jesus was passing by, he saw a man blind from birth, and his disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" "Neither this man nor his parents sinned," Jesus answered. "This came about so that God's works might be displayed in him. And we must do the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. And as long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world." After he said these things, he spit on the ground. He made some mud from the saliva, and he spread the mud in the blind man's eyes. "Go," he told him, "wash in the pool of Siloam," which means sent. So the blind man left, washed, and came back seeing. I think like one of the little background pieces like we have to know and understand is like what this blind man has experienced and however long his life has been. Because we know at the very least, like he's referred to as a man. This isn't a boy. This isn't a teenager. This is a guy who's lived. He's seen some stuff. But this is a guy who with a disability in this sort of time frame and truthfully, like the way that people with disabilities are treated here in the United States in 2019, it has gotten distinctly different, even in my lifetime. Like I can look back and see how I was treated by people, by you know, just in terms of like accessibility and stuff like that. All of that changed when George H.W. Bush signed into law the Americans with Disabilities Act. But that didn't happen until I was in elementary school. And so when we really think, really in about 25 years, we've vastly improved how we see people with disabilities. So flashback 2,000 years, and to think that when someone was born with a disability in that day and age, the belief was it's the evidence of sin, it's the evidence of demonic possession. And more often than not, the baby was either cast out of the house immediately, you know, and even we see in the third world today, oftentimes babies are just put in clay pots and put out in the wilderness. That's how people with disabilities are treated. And so often in Jewish culture, a baby with a disability would be weaned or at least get to the point to where they could somewhat sustain themselves, and then they were left to beg. Because it's not like, you know, it's not like in that day and age, not a lot of guys had like white-collar jobs where they went and worked at Wells Fargo, pulled down the big paychecks, you know, took their family to the, you know, on a Mediterranean cruise for vacation. Like, these were people who were just scraping by to survive. And so another mouth to feed with a set of hands that couldn't provide was a burden. So this man has been cast out of the house. He has spent his entire life begging, just trying to eat, just trying to stay alive. So if you're a smart beggar, you go to the high traffic areas in the city. Oftentimes you'd see beggars at the gates of the city as people would come and go, or you'd see beggars at the pool, at the big water source, you know, where people would come and get their water daily. So that's where this blind man stashed himself, by the pool, so he could beg. Just imagine the junk he hears day to day about himself. I mean, think back to y'all's middle school days, man. It's either we were too tall, too short, we were too fat, we were too skinny, our name rhymed with something funny. You know, like, you can get made fun of for anything. You go on social media and say anything meaningful these days, and you're either going to get, like, just lit on fire, burnt in effigy for something you said meaningful on social media. Like, people are crazy. People can be rough from time to time, and one of the things that you see immediately, here's Jesus and the disciples, they're coming by. Jesus, at the end of John chapter 8, he was almost stoned for what he was teaching. The Pharisees are trying to shut him up, and so they move to stone him, and Jesus slips away very quickly. And so you would think Jesus is trying to keep a low profile here. He's trying to lay low. But here in John 9, they're walking by, and his disciples open their big mouth. Hey, Jesus, who messed up? Who messed up that this guy is this way? Flashback to John chapter 1, all things are made through him. All people are made through him. So for those disciples in a roundabout way, hey, Jesus, you missed the boat on this one. Jesus, you didn't quite get it done. And man, like this to me, man, this is just one of the most poignant scenes in all of Scripture. Because you don't see it explicitly laid out, but in my mind, at some point, Jesus has to squat down because he's going to spit in the dirt. He's going to make mud. But I see Jesus squatting down, like far before he makes the mud and squats down. He said, I made him this way so that the works of God can be displayed in his life. And then Jesus starts to give him. And I think one of the things that you see is like, Jesus is binding those internal wounds before he's working on the external. And I think that one of the things we have to know and understand in our own lives, there are so many times when we walk through tribulation and trial and hurt and fear, and you'll hear the same script over and over. It feels like God doesn't love me. It feels like I'm all alone. It feels like every time I pray, my prayers hit the roof. It feels like when I walk into church and I sing these worship songs that nothing happens. But over and over, we see the fact that God's love for us is promised and secure, and it's not going anywhere. In fact, Romans chapter 5, that even when we still hated him, Christ died. So even in those times when it feels like you're abandoned, when it feels like you're alone, when it feels like you're isolated, Jesus loves you. And he's walking through you, with you through the mess. Because I think one of the things, like, we also, like, when we're hurting, when we're sitting here like this blind man and going, God, why? God, why? All these years of being blind, all these years of begging, when you sit there in that chair and go, God, why am I going through these financial hardships right now? God, why is my family situation a mess? God, why can't anything at work go well? God, why do I have this health scare right now? One of the things that we always ask is why. God, why do I not have arms? God, like, why couldn't it have been like a birthmark on my neck and all I got to do is wear a collared shirt and hide it? Like, why does my difference literally have to flap like two flags, you know, hanging off my shoulders, you know? And oftentimes in the midst of the hurt, the why doesn't make a whole lot of sense. As that blind man probably sits there day after day, year after year, and goes, God, why? That one encounter with Jesus explained the why. I made you this way so that my works can be displayed in you. And this blind man goes on to be healed, and he just turns this whole town upside down. Because, I mean, imagine that every day, every single day, you go to get your water. Blind Billy, he's sitting there chilling, begging for his bread, begging for his money. And then one day you go to get your water, and Blind Billy's not Blind Billy anymore. Like, a little bit of a game changer, you know? And so this town is suddenly, everybody's talking about Jesus. Everybody's talking about his power, his authority, and the Pharisees hate it. And they move to shut this blind man up. they're like, listen, you got to stop lying. You got to stop doing all this stuff. And finally, this blind man just goes, listen, I don't know how this all went about, but what I do know is I was blind and now I can see, and there's nobody that can do that apart from God. So y'all need to pump the brakes, you know? And I love how for these Pharisees, Jesus isn't operating according to the rules. Like, Jesus isn't working how they wanted Jesus to work. But oftentimes, God's grace and God's purposes doesn't go by the world standards. Like, an armless person is not supposed to be a vessel of God's grace. An armless person isn't supposed to be standing here right now. But you know, one of the reasons God made me this way, it's not for me to, like, get up on a stage or get up on a pulpit and preach and speak. And God made me this way so in all the times that I am standing in line at the grocery store and I pull my debit card out of my shoe and I swipe it in the credit card reader and the whole grocery store goes, what? Like, that just happened? And almost instantly somebody will ask a question. How'd you get this way? Or how, you know, they want the story. They want the scoop. And it'll be like that in restaurants. It'll be like that at the gas station when obviously armless people aren't supposed to drive cars, you know, like, so people have a lot of questions. And man, in those conversations, when they want the scoop, I give them the scoop, but it's not how I'm armless. It's how God has taken a broken kid like me. He's given me joy, given me hope, purpose because of the work of the Son. That's why God made me this way, because who in the world gets that opportunity? Oftentimes, like when we're sharing the gospel, we're knocking on people's doors, we're hitting people up, they're hitting me up. Like, who gets that? Like, it's like a pastor's dream, you know? That's why God made me this way. And when you sit there and you're hurt and your frustration and your darkness, and you ask the why, at bare minimum, what you see Paul say in 2 Corinthians chapter 1 is God comforts us in our affliction so that we can give that same comfort to others who are walking through their own affliction. So what you have in your darkness and your hurt and your frustration is your very unique opportunity to testify to the gospel of God's grace. And that applies to all of us without excuse, because I find it so interesting that is Jesus kind of, he gives this charge, he gives this command right here at the end of this healing. We must do the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. He doesn't turn around and say that to the disciples. He didn't turn around and say that to the all-star team. He said it to everybody who was listening. He said it to the blind man who sat right there, who's never gone to school a day in his life. There's no school for the blind. There's no school for the deaf in first century Israel. He has no relationships, no family, no leverage, no authority, nothing. And that's the guy that God sends out to be light and darkness. The least of these. So there's a lot of us in here that we feel like, man, God, I'm on like the C team. Like, I'm not the A team. Like, I'm like a good solid C minus, maybe D plus on a bad day. Like, Lord, I'm not that guy. And you know what? I'm not either. You want to know a little secret? I hate people. Like, just plain and simple. I hate people. I hate public speaking. Like, when God called me into ministry when I was 16, I was like, Lord, you're calling the wrong number. Like, I'm not... This is not the dude. Like, I'm no. And y'all, for years, like, before I would speak, the night before, I'd be throwing up. I'd be shaking, literally violently. I'd get up on stage and I'd stammer and stutter. I was like, Lord, this is not working out. I don't know what you're doing. But God had a plan. It was a rough plan, at least from my perspective, but God had a plan. I just had to trust him with what was next. I had to trust him with just that daily sort of faith, that daily opportunity to tell of the one who saved me, who's made me, who's given me purpose, who's given me hope. And that's all of us in here can do. Like, are we faithful with what God has given us today? Don't worry about what you've got to do at Sunday at church or in your small group. Or, man, how can you display God's grace when you walk into work tomorrow? How can you display God's grace in just a small little way if, you know, it actually does snow today? Is it like scraping the neighbor's sidewalk or dusting off their car for them? Like, how do we display the grace that we've been given to reflect a good, glorious, loving God? How do we act like lights in darkness? Because that's what God has called us to do. How do we do that without excuse? Realizing that God takes the least. All they have to be do is willing. Like, all they have to do is just be willing to go and wash in that pool. It's all the blind man had to do. So what is it for you? Is it walking across the street? Walking to that cubicle tomorrow to that guy that you know needs the hope of the gospel? Is it picking up the phone and calling a family member you haven't talked to in years? I don't know what it is, but like, you are called to be different than the rest of this world. That's a hard call. It's not touchy-feely friendly call. But we've also seen that He is a gracious God who is with us, even in the tough calls, even in the tough opportunities. So it's just my prayer that you would see God loves you, God has purpose for you, and that's up to us to see that, embrace it, and walk in it without excuse, without an asterisk, to know God has called you to be faithful. The rest is up to you.